إن الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا وسيئات أعمالنا، من يهديه الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له، وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، وأشهد أن محمدًا عبده ورسوله. أما بعد، so now then the hadith of عائشة رضي الله عنها أن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم اكتحل في رمضان وهو صائم، رواه ابن ماجه بإسناد ضعيف، قال الترمذي لا يصح في هذا الباب شيء. The hadith mentions that the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam applied kuhl to his eyes whilst he was fasting. So this topic revolves around the issue of placing things into, onto, around your eyes when you are fasting. Like the kuhl, like medication, eye drops, all of those types of things would come into the topic mentioned by this hadith. The hadith itself, as the scholars mention, is not authentic, and there is no authentic hadith on the issue of the kuhl and the eyes. Therefore, as Shaykh Al-Fawzan says, Al-Asl Al-Ibaha, the default is that it is therefore permissible. لِأَنَّ الْعَيْنِ لَيْسَتْ مَنْفَذًا تَصِلُ إِلَى الْجَوْفِ, because the eye is not a direct inlet into the stomach. An eye, the eyes, if you put drops into them, you put kuhl on them, whatever you put around them, in them, that will not have any direct inlet to the stomach. Hence, it is not an issue to place the kuhl or to even use eye drops, because there is no direct link or passageway for those drops or the kuhl to go into the stomach. فَيَجُوزُ لِلصَّائِمْ أَنْ يَكْتَحِلْ وَيَجُوزُ لَهُ أَنْ يَقْطَرْ فِي عَيْنَيْهِ وَيَجُوزُ لَهُ أَنْ يَتَدَاوَى فِي عَيْنَيْهِ. So it's permissible to take eye drops or eye medications whilst you're fasting, and that would not break your fast. There are scholars who do say you should avoid it though. You should avoid using eye drops and eye medications when you're fasting, if possible. If it is possible to avoid them, it's not on strict timings. You could use them in the evening after Maghrib, then avoid it. But if it is a necessity, then it is allowed and it does not break your fast. The Shaykh also mentioned a couple of other points linked to that here. He talks about eardrops, are they permissible or not? Anybody? Eardrops, are they allowed? Yes. Why not? The ear goes to the throat. Pour some liquid into the ear and you get the thirst taken away, goes into your stomach. Ya'ani, the scholars, they mention it's allowed because it's not a direct inlet, but the eyes and the ears both the same. The scholars say, and perhaps medically this is something known, Allahu A'lam, that there is a possibility when you take things into your eye, into your ears, that it is known people do feel a taste of something in their throat. Something going in through your ears, going in through your eyes, it is possible to feel a taste of it or some change of the taste in your throat. Hence the scholars say, as a precautionary measure, you should avoid eye drops and eardrops if possible. But if not, eye drops and eardrops do not break your fast and they are allowed. The only one that the Shaykh talks about differently is, of course, the nose drops. The nose drops are not allowed because the nose is a direct inlet into the stomach, a direct inlet to the inside of your body. So the nose drops are not allowed. However, the others for the ears and the eyes are allowed. Here you may mention the issue of the inhaler. The asthma inhalers. Are asthma inhalers allowed? They're allowed? How do you know? You seem very confident. So out of necessity, that's your reasoning. Necessity, when fasting, isn't actually a reasoning. Necessity. But necessity normally isn't a valid reason in fasting. For example, there are people who need to take medication, pills, tablets every 8 hours, every 4 hours. Necessity. They have to take them every 4 hours. But if they gotta swallow those tablets, then they're not fasting. So necessity doesn't always validate it. However, many of the scholars do have the fatwa that it's allowed. Not because of necessity necessarily, but because it is not considered in any respect as food or drink or nutrition for your body. It is not considered in any respect as food or drink or nutrition for your body. And that's based upon some of the scholars. They do mention an opinion. They say, normally when you eat and drink, it obviously breaks your fast. When you eat and drink and you take things down your throat, breaks your fast. But some scholars say, only if you eat and drink something beneficial and nutritional to your body. Meaning if you were to swallow something which has no benefit or nutrition to your body, then it doesn't break your fast. They give the example of pebbles. You pick up a few small pebbles, or the pebble dash you get on people's houses. Those pebbles, imagine you swallowed a few of those pebbles. Does it break your fast or not? The pebbles, when you swallow them, will they be digested in your body and go into your muscles? No, they won't. And you will realize that the next time you relieve yourself. The pebbles will go in and they will come out. They will not be digested. They won't be digested in your body. They won't go as nutrition. They won't go as energy into your body. They will sit there and they will come out. Hence, pebbles, eating them, provides no energy or nutrition to your body. Therefore, according to some scholars, if you were to swallow some pebbles when you're fasting, it doesn't break your fast, even though you have eaten the pebbles. You have eaten. But what you have eaten is of no benefit to your body nutritionally, in energy sense, anything. Hence, it doesn't break your fast, some of them say. Others, they say no. Whether it is of nutrition or benefit to your body or not, the very fact that you have eaten, you have swallowed, is sufficient to have broken your fast. Here the point was with the inhaler. The scholars, they mentioned the inhaler isn't even classed as eating or drinking. It's not even classed as eating or drinking. It is almost thin air. Practically nothing in it. It is practically nothing in it. There is no physical real elements to it that you swallow or you feel. It's practically closer to thin air than anything else. There's a narration or a story. Shaykh Ahmed al-Najmi, rahimahullah. On one occasion a person came to him and said to him, Shaykh, the asthma inhaler, can I use it when I'm fasting or not? The Shaykh said to him, bring it to me, let me see your inhaler. So the person brought the inhaler and showed it to the Shaykh. The Shaykh took the inhaler and started using it on his hand, using the puff onto his hand. So all that was coming out obviously was basically air. There's nothing else. You're not, no matter how many times you squeeze it, you're not eventually going to have a pile of powder on your hand or anything. It is basically air. So the Shaykh said, I started to use it on my hand and I realized that this item, it isn't something which would be considered as food or drink at all. And so he said, I gave him the ruling. I gave him the answer that it is permissible to use. So the fatwa of Shaykh Ahmed al-Najmi is it is permissible to use. Shaykh Ahmed says later on, it came to my knowledge that a Shaykh Al Uthaymeen had given the same fatwa, that it's allowed. So Shaykh Ahmed said, I was very happy and very pleased when I realized that a Shaykh Al Uthaymeen had given the same fatwa that these inhaler things are allowed. So many of the scholars, Shaykh bin Baz and others, they all say the inhaler is allowed. It's not really classed as food or drink in any sense, and it doesn't break your fast. Moving on. عن أبي هريرة رضي الله عنه قال قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم من نسي وهو صائم فأكل أو شرب فليتم صومه فإنما أطعمه الله وسقاه. That whomsoever eats or drinks forgetfully whilst he is fasting, then carry on fasting. Indeed, that is Allah who has provided you that food and drink and sustenance. So anybody who is fasting, accidentally they forget and they eat or they drink something, then they remember that they're fasting. What's the ruling? They carry on fasting for the rest of the day, but does it count or not? Counts. Do they have to make it up or not though? No. So the person who forgetfully eats or drinks something, it doesn't break his fast. When he remembers, he has to do what? He has to instantly stop eating. So if you're in the middle of eating something, you're eating some cake and you've forgotten you're fasting, then you remember. As soon as you remember, the penny drops. You're fasting, it's Ramadan. That spoon that you got coming up, what's going to happen to it? The spoon which is coming up with the top part of the cake with the Malteser, the flake, it's coming up. What are you going to do with it? Put it back where it belongs, back into the cake. You cannot have it. More than that, the previous spoon which is in your mouth, that one's still in your mouth. The next spoon was coming. The spoon that was coming, obviously you remembered now, put it back. The one that's already in your mouth, you're chewing away on it. The cake's all there, everywhere. What are you going to do with that? Are you allowed to at least take that now? That's in your mouth already. Can you take that down at least and now you carry on fasting or what? Spit it out. So is everybody agreed on that? Even the one in your mouth, you gotta spit it out. Is that what you're all saying? Is that what you're saying? Okay. So the ruling on that, even the food which is in your mouth, you're chewing on it. As soon as you remember you're fasting, even that you gotta get out of your mouth. Because now you've remembered. If you swallow that, you have swallowed it after you had remembered. Therefore, you have eaten it on purpose. Breaks your fast. So even the one in your mouth, whatever you got in your mouth, you gotta get it out. Use some water, whatever you need to do to flush it out. You cannot swallow that once you have remembered. But the basic ruling otherwise is that an individual who forgetfully eats or drinks, then it does not break your fast, and there is nothing to make up afterwards. You could have finished the whole cake. The whole cake. On your last spoon, when you swallow it, you remember. Now what? You've had the whole thing. Full. Not gonna feel a thing for the rest of the day. What's the ruling? Still your fast counts and you don't have to make it up. You've eaten the whole meal. And I remember telling the story before. Last year, or 2 years, 3 years ago, on one occasion we went somewhere to give a conference. It wasn't in Ramadan, I think it was outside, but somebody was making up a fast. So the brother who was the host at this particular markaz. So we were there, sitting down, Abu Hakim was there, I was there, we arrived, the host came with the food, we sat down, we had the meal as we arrived before the lecture, everything finished up, the brother finished up, the host finished up all his meal, and I think he was just about to open up his can, and then he remembered. Me, himself, He said, I was fasting today. After the whole meal, the whole spread, he finished everything. Then he remembered he was fasting. But okay, his fast will still count. That innama at'amahu Allahu wa saqahu. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has provided that for him. And the remainder of the day continues and he doesn't have to make it up. Then, وعن أبي هريرة رضي الله عنه قال قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم من ذرعه القيء فلا قضاء عليه ومن استقاء فعليه القضاء. Whomsoever is overcome by vomiting, then there is nothing to make up. But whoever makes himself vomit, then upon him is to make up. So if you feel ill, you don't feel too good, you've been fasting all day, and you end up vomiting, you're sick. Does it break your fast? No. Do you have to make it up? No. If you've been fasting all day and you had something the night before, your stomach's not feeling good, you want to get it out. Sometimes you vomit it out and you feel better afterwards. So you want to vomit it out, you purposely make yourself vomit. Breaks your fast or not? Breaks it now. Have to make up that day? Have to make it up. What are the methods that a person may use to make himself vomit? What are the types of things that would be classed as you having made yourself vomit? Putting your hand down your throat. That's the obvious one. Put your hand, your fingers into your throat and you make yourself vomit. That is one. There are five main ones the scholars mention. That is one obvious. Putting your finger into your mouth and making yourself vomit. What else? Which other method could a person be interpreted as having made himself vomit? If he did it on purpose, of course. Possibly. So that would come under a category where they talk about physically manipulating your body to make yourself vomit. Normally, in the books they say a person squashes his stomach this way and that way and squashes himself, physically manipulating your body to try and vomit. That's one. That is the body as a whole. The other one, just the fingering the mouth, that's the obvious, finger into the mouth, prodding, making yourself vomit. Secondly, about the physical manipulation of the body, they talk about squeezing the stomach and moving this way, that way, with squeezed stomach, etc. So you end up vomiting. That's two then. Three to go. A pen into your mouth, we'll class that as the finger in the mouth, same thing. Something else? Three more to go. Three more things a person could do. And he, if he did it on purpose, would be classed as having made himself vomit. A smell, a really bad smell. When you smell something really bad, it can make you want to vomit. So if you purposely go to the dump, purposely go to some disgusting smell on purpose and start smelling to make yourself vomit, then that would be classed as purposeful vomiting too. That's three. Looking at something. Is that possible? Yeah. Absolutely. So number four, by sight. You look at something disgusting and you are disgusted because it is disgusting. And as a consequence, it's possible, very possible. We don't want to go into too much detail, but imagine, for example, somebody in the corner over there vomited. They vomited. You see the vomit. Seeing the vomit, even though you're at a distance, you may not be able to smell it. Seeing it may be enough for some people to also end up vomiting. So seeing something of a disgusting nature, that can also be classed. If you did it on purpose, you go to look at something disgusting on purpose to try and manipulate the vomiting to occur, then that can be classed as purposeful too. One more. You're fasting. You can't eat anyway.
No. First of all, you eat.
That's premeditating a bit too much, maybe. Something else? So thinking about it, that's basically the fifth one. Hearing something. Hearing something of a disgusting nature, thinking about that thing of the disgusting nature, that could make somebody vomit. And not disgusting necessarily, but something of a disturbing nature, something very disturbing. You hear, or maybe sometimes you see somebody, they hear of the death of one of their relatives. Could be from that extreme state of hearing that news, they vomit. Very possible. So hearing something very devastating or disgusting or extreme of that nature may make you vomit also. If somebody goes and listens to things on purpose that they know impact upon them and may help them to vomit, then again, it's considered on purpose. So the point being, the one who makes himself vomit, then he's got to make up the day and his fast is broken. That classed as the first part, man dhara'ahu al-qay, the one who is overcome by vomiting. You never intended it whatsoever. You're not feeling well, you got some serious anxiety, something, and you end up vomiting. Not that you intended that or desired that, had any purposeful intent. So that is classed as accidental vomiting, doesn't break your fast, and don't have to make up the day. Moving on quickly to the next. عن جابر بن عبد الله رضي الله عنهما أن رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم خرج عام الفتح إلى مكة في رمضان. This hadith now is talking about the topic of traveling when you're fasting, or fasting when you're traveling. Is it allowed to fast when you're traveling? Are you supposed to fast when you're traveling? Are you just supposed to miss when you're traveling? This hadith now and the one after will give the rulings about that. In this one it mentions, Jabir ibn Abdullah radiallahu anhuma says, on one occasion we exited with the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam in Aam al-Fath. When is Aam al-Fath? The year of conquering. I must ask this question every single time this incident comes up. Aam al-Fath. When is Aam al-Fath? The year of conquering. When did the Muslims go back and conquer Makkah? Eighth year of Hijri. Certain? Not certain. Tenth year of Hijri. Eighth year of Hijri. The eighth year of Hijrah. They went back and they conquered Makkah. The year after that was known as Aam al-Wufud. The ninth year, when all of the people, so many came into Islam after they heard about Makkah being conquered by the Muslims. Mushrikun destroyed, Quraysh taken over. Many people came and entered into Islam. And then the tenth year, the final Hajj, the 11th year, the Prophet ﷺ died. So in the eighth year, he says, in Ramadan, that's when they had gone. It was in Ramadan. In Ramadan, he says, we headed out with the Prophet ﷺ towards Mecca. And everybody was obviously fasting. It was Ramadan. So they went out in the heat and the sun and the deserts in those days. فَصَامَ حَتَّى بَلَغَ كُرَاعَ الْغَمِيمِ. He says, we went out and we were all fasting until we reached a place, Qura' al-Ghamim. On the way between Medina and Mecca, they went traveling towards Mecca until they got to this place, Qura' al-Ghamim. And the people were all fasting. It was a fasting day. It was Ramadan. ثُمَّ نَعْمْ فَصَامَ النَّاسِ ثُمَّ دَعَى بِقَدَحٍ مِّن مَّاءٍ فَرَثَعَهُ. When they got to that place, they stopped and the Prophet ﷺ told them to bring him a bowl of water. So they brought him a bowl of water. And he raised it up in front of all of them who had stopped for a moment now. Raised it up in front of all of them who were traveling with him. حَتَّى نَظَرَ النَّاسُ إِلَيْهِ. Until all of the people, they were looking at the Prophet ﷺ with this water. ثُمَّ شَرِبَ. Then in front of them all, he drank it. In front of them all, he drank it. To show them what? To show them we are journeying, and as we are journeying, it's not a necessity for you to have to fast. He showed them openly, look, I'm not fasting. Opened it, drank the water in front of them all to show them we're on a journey and you don't have to fast, I'm not fasting. Then after that incident, obviously many people opened their fasting, but some continued fasting. Many of them, when they saw that and they realized the ruling, opened their fast. Traveling in the desert, everything. Some, though, carried on fasting. فَقِيلَ لَهُ بَعْدَ ذَلِكَ It was said to the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم after that, إِنَّ بَعْضَ النَّاسِ قَدْ صَامُ That some people are fasting. They are still fasting, some of them. So the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم said, أُولَئِكَ الْعُصَاتِ أُولَئِكَ الْعُصَاتِ Those are the sinners. Those are sinners. And in another narration it mentions, they came to him and said to him, after the incident of him drinking, إِنَّ بَعْضَ النَّاسِ قَدْ شَقَّ عَلَيْهِمُ الصَّيَامِ Or rather before the incident, وَإِنَّمَا يَنْتَظِرُونَ فِي مَا فَعَلْتِ In the other version of the narration it mentions, as they were heading out on the journey, at the certain stage, قُرَاع الْغَمِيمِ Some people came to the Prophet ﷺ. And they said, It's become so difficult on people to fast in this journey, in the heat and traveling in the deserts. They came to him and said, it's become really difficult on some people. And everybody's just waiting to see what you're going to say. Everybody's waiting to see what you're going to tell us. So then that's when the Prophet ﷺ told them to bring him the water and he drank in front of everyone to tell them and to show them, you can open your fasts. But some people didn't do it. Some people carried on fasting. Even though now they knew it was allowed to not fast as you're traveling, they carried on, and the Prophet ﷺ said, they are sinners. Bear that in mind. We're not finished with the hadith yet. Bear it in mind. The next hadith of Hamza ibn Amr al-Aslami, radiyallahu anhu, annahu qal, Ya Rasulullah, inni ajidu bi quwwatan ala as-siyami fi as-safar. He said, O Messenger of Allah, I find in of myself strength, ability to fast even when I'm traveling. فَهَلْ عَلَيَّ حَرَجْ هَلْ عَلَيَّ حَرَجْ Is there any problem? Is there any issue upon me for doing that? I'm able to fast when I travel. I got the strength, capability. I can fast when I'm traveling. So is there any issue if I fast when I'm traveling? فَقَالَ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ صَلَى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمْ هِيَ رُخْصَةٌ مِّنَ اللَّهِ فَمَنْ أَخَذَ بِهَا فَحَسَنْ وَمَنْ أَحَبَّ أَنْ يَسُومَ فَلَا جُنَاحَ عَلَيْهِ The Prophet ﷺ said to him, It is a permission, a license that Allah has given you. What license? That you don't have to fast when you're traveling. It is a permission, a license Allah has given you. So whoever takes that license and therefore does not fast, فَحَسَنٌ Then that's good. Whoever takes the license, takes the permission, takes the allowance and doesn't fast, then that's good. But whoever wants to fast, then there's no issue upon him. Whoever wants to fast, there's no issue upon him. This hadith indicates therefore when you're traveling, if you have the ability, you are allowed to fast and there's no issue upon you. You are not a sinner. The previous narration when they came and told the Prophet ﷺ, some people have carried on fasting, he said they are sinners. So how do we understand the two narrations when you're traveling? Are you allowed to fast or should you just break it? Do you have a choice? Do you not? What is the overall conclusion to this issue? On your ability, meaning what? So how do you explain the Prophet ﷺ saying they are sinners for fasting when they were traveling? Very simply. The scholars, they say, a person who is traveling is going to be one of two types. A person who is traveling is going to be one of two types. Either you are capable of fasting whilst traveling, or you're a bit miskeen, maybe you're old in age, maybe you're weak, you just couldn't even, you wouldn't be able to fast if you were trying when traveling. If you tried to fast when traveling, you wouldn't be able to do it. You'd fall unconscious, you'd get ill, this happens, that happens. You're a person incapable of fasting when out traveling. Traveling, no doubt, takes effort, it takes difficulty. Even with the luxury of the aeroplanes and the ACs in the car and everything, traveling is still difficult. It is still difficult getting to the airport, waiting 2 hours in the queues, getting past the security, sitting in the aeroplane, on the aeroplane, in the different type of air. Everything, there is still difficulty to traveling. A person may be the type that he is incapable of fasting when traveling. Or he may be of the type, he is strong and capable of fasting when traveling. If you are the type that is incapable of being able to fast when traveling, then what are your options? Your options are that you have no option. You must not fast. You should not fast. You should take the license. You are incapable. Why are you going to put such burden upon yourself, harm yourself, maybe fall unconscious, maybe crash your car? Why are you going to do all of that? You're incapable. So if you're incapable with the additional burden of traveling, then don't do it. Don't fast. Take the license. Second person, fit and strong and healthy, capable of fasting, no problem, he can do it. His options are what? He can either fast if he wants, or he can miss it if he wants. Question is, which is better? To miss it, why? Which is better is the question. The one who's capable, fit and healthy, he could travel to the other side of the world, trains, planes, cars, everything involved, and he can fast the whole day as well, no problem. What should he do? Fast or take the license anyway? Take the license anyway, decide that I've got the permission, so I'm just not going to fast even though I can. Take the concession as well. Sunnah to do what? To take it off? So everybody's saying you take the license, you take the concession. Nobody's saying it is more preferred to fast. Nobody wants to give that fatwa. Nobody. Well, there are scholars who have given it. There are scholars who have given the fatwa that it is preferred fast. Their reasoning, Ramadan, is it an obligatory act of worship? If you travel and you don't do it afterwards, it is obligatory upon you to make it up. With obligatory acts of worship, is it preferred to fulfill the obligation at the earliest opportunity or to delay and leave a burden on your shoulder? With obligatory acts, it is generally preferred in the sunnah to fulfill the obligatory acts at the earliest opportunity. You shouldn't delay. If you have the ability to do it, fulfill the obligations upon you and remove the burden off your shoulders. So they say, now you have the ability to do it. Nothing stopping you. The journey isn't stopping you. It's an obligatory act. If you don't do it, you take the license, that burden remains upon your shoulder for the obligation. Why are you going to put this burden of obligation on your shoulder when you can do it right now anyway? Just do it. Fulfill the obligation now. Who knows what's going to happen afterwards? What if you die on Eid day? So they say the obligation, fulfill it now. Now you can do it, so fulfill it. Others, they say no, based upon what you mentioned. They say no, even if you can do it, don't do it. Take the concession. Why? Because of the narrations, إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُحِبُّ أَن تُؤْتَى رُخَصُهُ. Allah loves that you should take the concessions that He gives you. Narration. So they say, take the concession Allah has given you. In this narration too, فَمَنْ أَخَذَ بِهَا فَحَسَنٌ. Whoever takes the concession, then that is good. So they say, look, taking the concession is something good. You should take it, even if you're capable. And then make it up afterwards. Because Allah loves that you take the concessions He gives you. So you have a difference on that. The narration where the Prophet ﷺ said, they are sinners, That was therefore referring to the fact that they were actually incapable in that great difficulty, but they were still trying to do it. There's another narration. On one occasion, some of the companions went out with the Prophet ﷺ on a journey. Some were fasting, some were not. When they camped up, they stopped walking and they camped up somewhere. It's mentioned in the narration, the ones who were fasting, as soon as they got to the place where they were going to camp up, they collapsed and fell down and lying down, exhausted. The ones who hadn't been fasting had taken the concession. In the narration it says, they were still fit and healthy and they set up all the tents and did everything. And the Prophet ﷺ praised them. So again, the scholars say, look, the praise came for the ones who hadn't been fasting. When they stopped, they were the ones who still had the energy and set up the camp and everything. The others who'd been fasting, they were exhausted, fell down as soon as they got to the campsite. So they say maybe that's an indication to take concessions on journeys is better. So that is the issue regarding the journeying. At what point do you break your fast? So now tomorrow you have a flight at 2 p.m. from Manchester Airport. 2 p.m. is your flight. Booked, confirmed ticket, you got it, everything reserved, confirmed. Seat 42D. So now, tomorrow 2 p.m. Tomorrow morning at Suhoor, do you have to take the Suhoor and start fasting or not? Yes or no? No, because you know on that day, later on at 2 o'clock, you're going to be journeying. You're going to be a traveler. So some scholars say, that day, the whole day, you don't have to fast. You know you're going to be traveling. It's an opinion. The stronger opinion is that you have to start fasting in the morning. Because up until 2 p.m. when the aeroplane takes off and starts heading out, up until that time, you're still sat here in Manchester Airport, 5 miles from your house. Are you a traveler yet? Up until 2 p.m. of that day, tomorrow, are you going to be a traveler yet? No, you're still resident. You're going to become a traveler at about 10 past 2 by the time the aeroplane takes off. So from the morning up until 2 p.m., what reason do you have to not fast? You can't say because I'm a traveler, you're not yet. You're not. That hasn't begun. So you're not a traveler. So what other reason are you not fasting for? You can't say because I intend to travel. Other scholars, they say yes, you can. You intend and you make the firm, resolute intention to travel, confirm ticket. You can leave the whole day from the beginning. Others say no. Even if you have the firm intention, until you actually begin the act of traveling, you can't. So you have to wait till 2 o'clock, you're fasting till then. 2 o'clock when you get onto the plane, you can ask for your drink and your meal. And you can open your fast. Because now you are traveling. That is what the scholars mention regarding that. Yes, that for that day, your intention would still be as normal. You begin the day as normal. They say up until 2 o'clock, you are absolutely normal. Make your intention before Fajr, start fasting as normal. At 2 o'clock, when you become a traveler, now your ruling changes over to the traveler rulings. Before that, everything you do as normal. Make your intention before Fajr, fast the same as normal up until 2 o'clock. Because what happens, they say, 2 o'clock, you've got your confirmed ticket. You get to the airport at 2 o'clock, all of a sudden there's an inch of snow, runway is closed, all the flights are cancelled. They say your flight now, next one will book you on tomorrow morning. You already took the concession from the morning, you haven't been fasting. Why not? Rest of the day you're going to be sat at home again now. You've missed the whole day for what? Have you travelled? You ended up not travelling anywhere. Hence the scholars say, don't do it until you actually begin the journey. That too. So when the airplane takes off, you can't ask for your drink straight away. In reality, that's the ruling. In reality, the airplane takes off, it's going to take maybe a couple of minutes, a few minutes, until you're at a distance where you are a traveler outside of Manchester. You got to be to the distance of traveling until you become a traveler. So after that, it's the last one we're going to be able to cover today. حديث ابن عباس رضي الله تعالى عنهما قال رخص للشيخ الكبير أن يفطر ويطعم عن كل يوم مسكينا ولا قضاء عليه.
it has been, another concession has been given for the Al-Shaykh Al-Kabir. That the Shaykh, Al-Shaykh Al-Kabir doesn't have to fast. And he can just feed a poor person for every day. Who is Al-Shaykh Al-Kabir? Who would qualify to be Al-Shaykh Al-Kabir as the wording of the hadith says? Shaykh bin Baz, Shaykh Fawzan, Shaykh Kabir, big scholar. The meaning of Shaykh linguistically refers to somebody elderly in age. So the meaning of a Shaykh Al-Kabir is somebody old in age. So the elderly who are incapable, not just the elderly by itself, not just the elderly, you could get people 90 years old, mashallah, they can still fast, no problem, fit and healthy, no problem, they fast. But the elderly who have now become incapable, the elderly who have now become incapable physically, you can't do it anymore, then the ruling for them is afterwards they have to make it up or do what? They cannot possibly make it up, because if they are not fasting in Ramadan due to their old age, after Ramadan they are even older in age. So that can't be the ruling for them. The ruling is going to be that they feed a poor person for every day. And that is the same ruling as who else? Who else feeds a poor person for every day and doesn't have to make him up? The one who has a lifelong illness. Doctor says to you, you've got some illness, you can't fast. These medicines, these tablets, you got to take them every 4 hours, every day, every 4 hours. Every day. You got this thing, without these tablets, you're in big problems. We can just control it, we can never fix it. Every 4 hours, these tablets. Or every 2 hours, these tablets. So now, can you ever fast? Never. You can't, the doctor says, you can't take it off for a month, you got to keep this medication on. We can't fix your problem, it's just long term, constant, that's how it is. So you can't fast, huh? Possibly certain forms of diabetes. So you can never fast. What do you do then? You feed a poor person for every day. So now, you can round off the types of people who are allowed to miss. The types of people who are allowed to miss are a traveler, and he's got to make up the days afterwards. Also, so, similar to the traveler, who else is in the same category as the traveler? Somebody who can miss but then got to make him up. Somebody who is temporarily ill. That will come to in a minute. Somebody who's temporarily ill, you get a fever for a week in Ramadan, heavy, you can't fast. Migraines, all sorts, fever, everything. You can't fast for a week, okay, no problem. After Eid, when you've recovered, you make up that week. So somebody who's temporarily ill, even if that temporary illness is long term. Doctor says to you, you've got something, we have treated this type of patient in the past, normally takes about 9 to 12 months to recover. Or normally takes 6 to 9 months to recover, let's say. He tells you, take the medication, do the physio, do whatever else we do. 6 to 9 months, your muscles, everything, it'll all get fixed up, your insides will get fixed up. In about 6 to 9 months, we expect a full recovery. Before then, medication, this, that, the other, hospital visits, everything. So now that 6 to 9 months, you've been diagnosed today. So all of this Ramadan gone. The next 8 months gone. So what's your ruling? Your ruling is when it gets to next March, you're going to start making up this Ramadan. In 9 months, when you finally recover, you start making up. Doesn't matter when you recover, as long as they say in the books of fiqh, Yurja bur'uhu, in the books of fiqh, it is expected he will recover. If it is expected he will recover, then you wait until you recover and make up. Man la yurja bur'uhu, the one who it is not expected he will recover, long term chronic illness, then he is the one who can just feed. So short illness, make up afterwards. Traveler, make up afterwards. Long illness, never going to recover, feed a poor person every day. Old in age, can't fast, feed a poor person every day. The woman who's menstruating and the woman who's on postnatal bleeding cannot fast and must make up afterwards. So that's the same as the traveler and the temporarily ill. A woman on the period is technically temporarily ill like that person. She'll recover after a week, the period finishes, makes that up afterwards. Postnatal bleeding, only a certain number of days. Finished, make them up afterwards. The only issue that remains is the pregnant and the breastfeeding women, and that issue is a large issue. Pregnant and breastfeeding women with many technicalities to it. Some scholars, they say a pregnant woman, when she's pregnant, I mean, first, is it allowed for a pregnant woman to not fast? Before we even get onto what she does afterwards, is it even allowed for a pregnant woman to miss fasting? Even that is different amongst the scholars. It's not a guaranteed, it's not a given. Like a traveler, when you're traveling, it is a given, you can miss. A pregnant woman, some scholars say it's not a given. A pregnant woman, they say it's down to a checklist. If you fast, is it going to harm your body? Is it going to cause you some medical complications? Is it going to harm the baby? If the answer is no to everything, doctor says, with all due respect, everything, your charts, your figures, your readings, everything is perfect. You could fast. And at this stage in your pregnancy, we do not expect any change or any issue. In that case, the scholars say she has no right to miss. Upon what right is she missing? She's pregnant, okay. But everything checks out, everything medically okay, she's got no issue with it, then she should fast. Others, they say, actually, pregnancy is a given. If you are pregnant, automatically you can miss. So there's a difference of opinion as to whether it's automatically missing in the first place or not. Then if you do miss, there's a difference in the ruling as to what you have to do. Some scholars say a pregnant woman who misses, like the permanent committee mostly, Sheikh bin Baz, Sheikh al-Uthaymeen, they say a pregnant woman who misses must afterwards make up the days. Because they say a woman who's pregnant is technically like somebody who's temporarily ill. Somebody who's temporarily ill will get better eventually and they'll make up. A woman who's pregnant will only be pregnant for a temporary amount of time, 9 months. Then after that, pregnancy finished. So they say she must make up after the pregnancy is done and finished. Other scholars, they say no. A pregnant woman does not do that. Rather, a pregnant woman does not have to make up any days. She can simply feed a poor person every day. So it's as if they say she is more like somebody who is old in age or somebody who is long-term ill. They associate her to that type of category. And they say, no, she can just feed a poor person every day. Others, they say, it depends on the reason why she missed fasting. If a pregnant woman misses fasting because she fears, medically, the doctors tell her, your health, there will be detrimental effects to your health. Your baby is fit and healthy. Everything perfect. But you, something about you, there's a problem. If you fast, you will harm yourself. The scholars say, if that's the reason why she misses, then there's a particular ruling. A particular ruling. If she misses because of the opposite, doctors say, you're fit and healthy, no problem on you. But if you fast, the baby does seem to have some complications medically, there's a problem there. So now she's missing not because of her, but because of the baby. Different ruling. So the scholars sometimes give details regarding as to why a pregnant woman missed the fasting. Breastfeeding, same thing. Some scholars say automatic. If you're breastfeeding, you can miss. It's a given. Others, they say no again. They say if the checklist works out, you're breastfeeding, and if you fast, will that cause a problem to the supply? If it will cause a problem to the supply, or it will cause a problem to your health, it will cause a problem to the baby not getting enough feed, those types of things occur on your checklist, then okay, you can miss. If everything is a no, you can fast, but mashallah, no impact upon the supply, upon the feed for the baby, nothing. They say, why are you missing then? Fast. So it's not a guaranteed again. If a woman was absolutely fit and healthy, even with that fasting, for example, in winter days, 8 hours. Many women, perhaps fit and healthy, it wouldn't impact upon them 8 hours without food and drink. 16 hours of food and drink and liquids, and their breastfeeding carries on completely normal for some. In that case, the scholars will say, why are you missing then? Nothing is impacting upon you, why are you missing? So there's a difference. Some say no, regardless of impact, you can miss. Others, they say no, it's got to be the impact. So there, that's a big issue. That's too much of an issue to go into the details and the evidences. So you can read upon that. Shaykh al-Albani has written some good works on that. Other scholars have written about it. You can look into that issue, and there are those opinions about a woman either making up or having to feed a poor person. Toothpaste when you're fasting, is it allowed or not? Toothpaste. One thing the scholars do mention is if it is very strong flavored toothpaste, they said that definitely you should avoid. Because even if you wash it out, you're going to be left with a very strong flavor, and you swallow that down, it's like you're tasting food and swallowing it down. A very strong flavored toothpaste, you should definitely avoid altogether. Minor flavored toothpastes, bland, minor flavored toothpastes, again, you should avoid. Brush your teeth after suhoor and after maghrib. You should avoid. If a need came up, then it is allowed. Just be careful that you don't swallow anything. And ideally, you shouldn't do it. Ideally, leave it till after maghrib and after suhoor. And you don't need to brush during the day. Use the miswak, etc. We'll have to conclude on point today. We'll have to stop there. That will be the final lesson. Wa sallallahu ala nabiyyina Muhammad wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in.